Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Goose. My name is Antoinette Landejean from Cork & Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'm delighted to introduce today's presenter, Stad Krems. Weingut Krems boasts more than 550 years of history, making it one of the oldest wine producers in the whole of Europe. Since July 2003, it has been managed by a young, innovative team directed by Fritz Maisbauer. Its flagships are Riesling and Grüneveltliner. Fritz and the team cultivate 31 hectares of vineyards on the estate, whose holdings are exclusively on the best terraced locations of the city of Krems. Tonight, Fritz is represented by Goose. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we will get to them time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. Goose, please introduce yourself and this beautiful winery.
Hello audience, my name is Franz Josef Gansberger. Gans means goose in English, so that's the reason why most of my international friends call me Goose. I worked together with Fritz since 2007 and we run the winery together. The winery is called Weingut Stadt Krems, which means winery of the city of Krems. So this is a very special situation in Austria and Europe too, that a city owns a winery. So there's only one second winery, which is owned by our capital city of Vienna. It's called Kobenzl. We have a really long tradition. It starts in 1452. And it's almost the same story that the hospice in Bonn have. So there is a hospice, a place for people who have nobody who taking care of them in their last month, weeks and hours. And they were taking care in the hospice. And if they passed away, the city or the hospice got everything. That's maybe the reason why we grow wines on around 50 hectares of vineyards. I have a video prepared and I'd like to show you the video to get a small impression about our landscape. This is a really beautiful area. You will see the Danube, you will see a little bit of the harvest and the press house and also our cellar. So it is a short video and I hope you enjoy that. I hope you got some impressions of our beautiful landscape. Maybe you saw there is a lot of stepstone terraces, a lot of handwork in the vineyards. And what is also really important, you saw a young guy who tastes the juice. He looks pretty young, but in the end of the day, he's turning 30 this year. This is our cellar master. And I think for all medium-sized wineries, it's really important to have a perfect team. And we have a lot of young people in our team. And it's not only Fritz and me. We have a lot of people who help to vinify all these wonderful grapes to nice, really white wines. At the end of the day, we are in the Kremstal. It is a around 2,300 hectare small area in between the famous Wachau area and the large Kamptal maybe. And very typical for this area are the different soils. So we have soils which are really benefit for Riesling. These are mostly granite and gneiss soils, but in the eastern part of the area, direction to the Kamptal and the Wagram area, you find a lot of Löss, which benefits really fresh and fruity Grüner-Veltliners. And the varieties, the famous, the important varieties in our area are for sure the Grüner-Veltliner, which is typical for Austria. So if you see Grüner-Veltliner, in the most cases it comes from Austria. I think 90% of the world growing area is in Austria. There are only a few hectares in our neighbor countries like Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Hungary. And it is a very fancy grape now in New Zealand, around 30 hectares. And also in the States are 15 to 20 hectares existing, mainly in the Santa Barbara area. And we have friends which did practice in our areas. Graham Satoma, for example, I think he's the most famous US producer for Grüner Veltliner. And he did practice at the famous Knoll Winery, and I think he learned a lot here. The second important variety in the area is Riesling. So the content around is around 50% Grüner Veltliner and 15% of Riesling. That is different in our winery. We have around 55% Grüner Veltliner, so also the main variety, but we have 35% of Riesling. That depends on a former winemaker, Kurt Körbler. He's now 96 years old, still living on the winery. He studied in Germany and he brought a lot of knowledge about Riesling and also typical German clones. So that is funny that some of the producers in our areas, if we do tastings together, they call our Rieslings are the most German influenced style of Riesling, not the winemaking style. So if we speak about the difference between Austrian and German Rieslings, I can tell you Austrian Riesling is dry. So a cabinet style that maybe you know from German Rieslings is not existing in Austria. So sometimes we have 4, 5, 6 gram residual sugar, but that's the maximum. Maybe that we can say for all our wines. So it's really important for us to have it dry. And in the entry level and in the medium category, we try to show the maximum potential of fruit and single vineyards, like we have then the tasting, the Carillon parts. Riesling, there we are focused on showing the potential of the soil and also the aging potential. Maybe we could start with the first wine for the tasting. This is Grüner Veltliner Kremstal. This, in the end of the day, this is our most important wine for the US market. Kremstal, like the area, it is a wine which the grapes, the wines are mostly on gravel and loess soil. So the Veltliner shows for me a very interesting lemon and fruit driven nose. I think the big effort of Grüner Veltliner is in all categories. That's the reason why I love Grüner Veltliner so much. You can make a wine with 11% per volume alcohol or a medium category with 12.5% per volume alcohol. Like this is, Kremstal is a medium category, but you can also make single vineyard wines with a really, really great aging potential. It works with in all these categories. And I think the big effort is you have a wine which give you the feeling, especially the Kremstal, after the first glass, you like to drink the next glass, because we are focused on drinkability. And if we speak about character of our wines, this is a category where we like to call drinking must be fun. And I think it is a good wine for drinking by the glass if you have a beautiful day on a terrace, glass of wine, glass of water. But it goes also well with every kind of white meat, like chicken or turkey, but also with fish and seafood, for example. Lemon, grapefruit, a lot of these citrus aromas, but also a nice minerality, a little bit of smokiness. Yeah, maybe about the area. I told you before, we are in between of the famous Wachau area. They have their own categories with Steinfeder, Federspiel, and Smaragd category. We're not allowed to use these categories. So in the end of the day, we have Kremstal DOC, which is like the DOC or the AOC rules, for example. So we try to focus with these law. This is a law for the area. So it's not coming from the state or from the government. So this is a law that the producer in the area decide for themselves. So in our area, the two main varieties are Grüner Veltliner and Riesling. And the normal DSC category is focused on freshness and fruit. And we have also a reserve category, which is up to 13% per volume alcohol and not released before the 1st of May. In the tasting, I think we have on our sheet as a second wine, the Grüner Veltliner Stein. This is a village wine in the end of the day. We have three main parts of the city. One is called Krems, like the winery. Then we have a part which is called Und, which means end. But Und is a really small, there's a famous winery, Undhof Salomon, Berthold Salomon is located there. And then we have the big historic Windner village, which is called Stein. So this is a wine from the village of Stein. In the end of the day, maybe this is our best value that we have in the winery, because it's only from steep stepstone terraces. But we have a lot of small vineyards. It depends on the history. It depends on the Bürgerspital Stiftung, the hospice that we have, that we have a lot of small plots. So we have a lot of different single vineyards. And if we have only 400 to 600 kilo, it makes no sense to vinify them all separately. So all these small vineyards, which are too small to vinify them separately, are in this village wine. So in the end of the day, the connoisseur, the people who are really interested in wine, our private customers, know about the quality of this wine. This is normally picked in the middle of October to end of October. So really ripe grape material. We have 13% per volume alcohol on the label. So in the end of the day, it's Kremstal DSC Reserve. And if you compare it with the Grüner Veltliner Kremstal, the first wine, for me, there's a big difference. In truth, in our list, in our portfolio, there's a wine in between. So this is a big step. And for me, there's a lot of yellow aroma. So typical for really ripe and clean and selected harvested Grüner Veltliner grapes, maybe a difference to the famous Wachau area. So if we don't have a really difficult vintage like 2010 or 2014, we never ever use any Botrytis grapes. So we select them strictly out. Because of we are so close, so we have to find our different style of winemaking. So we are really focused on straightness, minerality, and fruit. And we do skin contact for almost all our wines. For the entry level category, like the Kremstal, is between 6 and 8 hours. For the medium category, we do 12 to 14 hours, and the reserve categories are up to 24 to 36 hours, depends on the processing time. So we press these grapes. You saw it maybe in the video. So it is a state-of-the-art press house with pneumatic presses. And we did a lot of invests 6 years ago. We built a new press house with elevator belts, for example, so that we don't have to pump any grapes or any must anymore. So we try to do everything gentle to have less bitterness, less in our grapes. I think for most of the wineries, modern wineries is the state of the art. And I can tell you that all Fritz, me, but also our cellar master, who is much younger, 20 years younger, we had a good education. There is a good school close to Vienna. It's called Kloster Neuburg. So all Austrian famous winemakers in our generation made this school. I have two parents which both have studied. So after the school, I studied international business and thought about working in the investment business, but it works only 2 years. Then I was too curious to go back to vineyards to have this feeling to see how vineyards are growing, how grapes are growing. And I'm out of a winemaker family, so it was quite funny, because my dad jokes sometimes with me and said he didn't guess that I will stay 2 years in a normal office job. And yeah, I think that is the big effort of being a winemaker, is that you have a new vintage every year. And for example, 2017, like the Grüner Veltliner Stein is in the glass. Maybe that shows a little bit the aging potential of Grüner Veltliner, and this is really great. So in the States, it's sometimes I think it's difficult to get a Grüner Veltliner which is 20 or 30 years old. But I can tell you, if you come ever to Europe, to Austria, if you come in wineries, please ask that they maybe should open a bottle which is 20 years old. And that will show you the potential of the ripe, the aging potential of Grüner Veltliner. And maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we won a competition for old wines in Germany with a 1971 vintage of Grüner Veltliner Weinzelberg. And it is, I can tell you, 1971 was a really good vintage. Look at me. So I turned 50 this year. I think there's a really great potential, aging potential, also in the medium category. Nobody will, for a reserve category, the people believe that. But if you, for example, I told you Emmerich Knoll from the Wachau area, if you come to Knoll, ask them, maybe they can open a 15-year-old bottle of Federspiel. That is also a big surprise. So I think there's a really good potential, aging potential. And in kind of food pairing, this more powerful category of Grüner Veltliner, I will pair with stronger taste food, typical Austrian cuisine, like fried dishes, like Wiener Schnitzel, for example, goes really well with Grüner Veltliner Stein. And if you have a Grüner Veltliner which is matured for 5, 6, 10 years, and people don't like red wine to their steak or to their beef, it works also with the matured category of Grüner Veltliner. For mid typical, for ripe and reserve category, Grüner Veltliner wines is all these yellow flavors, yellow aromas like Golden Delicious, apples, pears. And I have that also on the palate. So I have a lot of yellow fruit on the palate. And we vinify and age our Veltliners mostly in stainless steel casks. So we do a chilled fermentation between 17 and 19 degrees Celsius, so not too cold. That is a big development. If people ask, I'm now always almost 30 years in the business, what is the big development in these 30 years? My grandfather, for example, he was a great, great winemaker. But in the end of the day, he cleaned the press once before the harvest starts. In the middle, he pressed red wine grapes, Zweigelt, for example. So he saw that he had to clean the press. And then he cleaned the press after the harvest. That was normal. Today, I can tell you, we clean our press after every pressing. We do chemical cleaning on every, if we are finished on the day. And so I think that we spend 60% of the whole time that we are in the cellar, we spend time for cleaning. And the second really big difference is selection in the vineyard. So we harvest almost everything in 400 kilogram boxes. Don't have it here. So we can select in the vineyard what is perfect ripe, where we have sometimes botrytis on the grape. So we select it in the vineyards. And for sure, you have to do, the reason why we do a lot of hand picking is that the people have to decide which grape is ripe and which is not ripe. So for all single vineyards, we have minimum three harvest steps. Also in a good vintage, in a simple vintage like 2019 and 2020 was, we have more than two selections. And I think that it's important that you harvest only ripe grapes. And that's the reason why we don't use harvesting machines, because we have to do this decision. I told you the second important variety. There are a handful of important varieties in the Kremstal area. So we have also Neuburger or Müller-Thurgauer, also international varieties like Chardonnay or Sauvignon Blanc. And there is also a 15 to 18% percentage of red wine grapes, mainly Zweigelt, which is the typical Austrian red wine grape, but also a little bit Pinot Noir, because in the past we thought we are 100% white wine area, because it is a cooler area. We have in our backyard from Krems, we have a cooler area which is called Waldviertel. So in the summertime, the Danube heats up, so we have the cold winds every night. So we have high temperatures during the day, which is good for the ripeness, and we have cool winds and colder temperatures during the night, which benefits the freshness and the fruit. So I think the Riesling, for example, needs these temperature changes between day and nights. So maybe we go to the Riesling. Riesling Kremstal, which is also an entry-level category of Riesling. Typical for Austrian Rieslings is, so if you read something about Riesling, you will every time read apricots and peaches. I think apricots is a typical sign of cultured yeasts. So for me, more peaches, do the people know in the States, we call them vineyard peaches. They are flat and white. And for example, if you know the typical Italian fancy drink of Bellini, this is peach mark with Prosecco or sparkling wine. This Bellini mark is made out of the small vineyard peaches. They are white, or we have also red flat ones. And for me, that is a typical taste of the Riesling Kremstal, for example. Also a hint of minerality, so dark smoky influence of granite and gneiss soil. A good sign for Riesling, if you have a blind tasting all the time, is if you have to decide Grüner Veltliner and Riesling in a blind tasting, normally the Riesling have minimum 1 gram or 1.5 or 2 gram more acidity than Grüner Veltliner. So if you feel, and for me, a good sign of minerality is also if you feel this, the mouth is starting watering, and if you feel a saltiness on the side of your tongue, that is a good sign for minerality. So you have that in the entry-level category, but for sure you have that in the single vineyard. So the next wine will be grilling parts, and it's quite interesting. There's also one category, a village category in between, which is not imported to the States. So we make a big step to the next wine, and a single vineyard is a single vineyard in the end of the day. So the idea for single vineyards is to show the potential of the soil and the aging potential. And the Grillen Parts vineyard is a really special. So here you see the Grillen Parts, but more important is this granite and gneiss soil that you see here. It is not the kind of soil where the roots of the Grillen Parts are in. So we have on top of this granite and gneiss soil, we have alluvial soil, yellow and red gravel. So in the vineyard, you see a lot of yellow and red gravel, but that means it is really good drain. So it's never wet. So the roots and the vines have, it's difficult for them to grow. So we have no irrigation there, irrigation systems also. So in the end of the day, this Grillen Parts is picked in the, maybe not in the last two vintages, 2018 and 19, were vintages we have never saw before. So in 18, we start the harvest in the end of August, which is, so normally we start in the second week of September for sparkling basic wines, and in the third to fourth week of September with the main harvest. And we hope that was only these two vintages, because it is really stressful for us if we have to start picking in the last week of August. Normally I'm in my holiday flat close to Salzburg in some really nice lake. And in August, normally we make holidays and collect power for the harvest. Yeah. Riesling Grillen Parts. This is the wine where we got the most attention and the highest ratings and scores over the last years. Because of, in the end of the day, it's almost a monopole vineyard. Grillen Parts. Grillen are the small insects. Grillen. And parts is the word for hill, for a nice hill. And the whole vineyard is 4.8 hectare. We have 4.6. There's only a second producer which have 0.2 hectares. An organic winery, a really good guy, Urban Stagert. And he's really motivated. He, for example, I told you before, we have a lot of small vineyards, 400 kilo there, 600 kilo in the next vineyard. He have sometimes only 200 kilo. He's a little bit like, he's the Austrian Marcus Molitor. So sometimes we have 250 bottles of wine. So I think if you work like we do, so we are really focused on export work in 30 different countries, 70% export, and you have 200 bottles of something, so you can drink that by yourself or so. But yeah, 4.6 hectare. And from this 4.6 hectare, 4.3 are planted with Riesling. I'm a big fan of Riesling Grillen Parts because of that shows you the potential of dry Austrian Riesling. So, and I think you have the 2017 on the list. It was a really good vintage with, for me, a great potential. And this is the first wine where we have more influence of minerality, of smokiness, of dark aromas than of primary fruit. So because of this is a category where we're not really focused so much on primary fruit, because you have to know that after 2 or 3 years, the primary fruit is gone, and then you need more. You need a backbone, you need the acidity, you need the minerality. And so also in winemaking, it's totally different. So we keep them between 36 and 48 hours on skins, if it's possible. In a cooler vintage, it's no problem. In 2018 and 19, we had it for 12 hours, for example. Because if you get the grapes in and you have 25 degrees Celsius, also in the night, it's difficult to keep it on skins, to don't start the fermentation process in the press, for example. But in cooler vintages, we like to keep them for minimum 36 to 48 hours. We had it for 72 hours if it was really cold, like 16, for example. Then we do spontaneous fermentation, like for all our single vineyards, we do spontaneous fermentations. And a smaller part is also fermented in Austrian oak. So I can tell you that we are sustainable certified since years. And I think the most sustainable cask that we can have, we use here in Stadtkrems, because the wood from the oaks came 35 kilometers from us, far from the Mannhardsberg. There is it's called Schönborn Forests. And the cooper is in the same village. Maybe you know Bernhard Ott, a really famous Wagram producer. The village is Feuersbrunn, and his name is Georg Benninger. His grandfather, this is a curious story. His grandfather was the third biggest cooper in Austria, and his father tried to continue, but he saw that in the middle of the 80s, stainless steel cask was state of the art, and everybody was putting out the old oak barrels and then acacia barrels and filled up our cellars with stainless steel casks and tanks, because of everybody was focused on fruit, and nobody liked the old barrels. And like in the most cases, the old stuff is coming back. So today I can tell you that all producers, if you speak with, I don't know, Brünnelmeier, UHH, Michi Mallard or Pietro Salomon, everybody is, now it's difficult to buy oak casks, because our coopers are sold out for years. So if you like to have Stockinger barrels, you have to wait for 24 months if you like to have big barrels. So, and Georg, he's a guy, he's less than 30 years old, and his grandfather influenced him, and his grandfather is over 70 and still in the business. And his idea was to learn at the best guy, the best cooper in Austria. This is Stockinger, and he learned at Stockinger. And since, I guess, 7 years, he runs their own business. So he came back in an age of 22. And since 7 years, he runs the business, and he makes great, great barrels. And I'm really proud, because the story is 35 kilometers, the maximum distance, that the trees are far from us. So I think that is really sustainable, a really sustainable cask. And in the end of the day, we don't like to have too much influence of oak or wood. That is not typical for our area. So if you like to have oak influenced wine by Californian Chardonnay or maybe Burgundy whites. So in our idea, our philosophy is to use oak cask only to get the wines more harmonious and more round and more velvet, for example. And yeah, I think this will be the next big investments in our winery. So I can tell you that as Fritz overtook the winery in 2003, there was a decision of the city government to sell it, because of they had to spend every year between 150 and 300,000 euros to have a winery. So there was 12 employees, and the total output was 65,000 bottles. The rest was sold as grapes to the big cooperative in Krems. And we came, both Fritz and me, we came from the big cooperative in the Wachau area, from the Domäne Wachau, in the past Freie Weingärtner Wachau. So that was our idea to rename it from Freie Weingärtner Wachau to Domäne Wachau. Because I met people in the States who asked me, were they arrested in the past or why they are free now? So Freie Weingärtner Wachau is a, Domäne Wachau is much easier to pronounce. And Fritz was 15 years or 16 years there, and me six, and we quit in 2003. And Fritz immediately moved to Stadt Krems. And he guaranteed our mayor and our city government that it's possible to run it commercially successful. His guarantee was after 10 years, he will run in black numbers. And he did it after the fourth year. And in the beginning, it was difficult. We had no customers, but we had really good networks from this cooperative and from the time in the cooperative. And we have to be thankful, also say thank you to Domäne Wachau that we was able to meet all these people. And for example, in the States, we started with Vindi Vino in the past, many years ago, but we had to switch. Now we our wines are imported by Winebow, and we are quite happy that we are available in almost all states, and we are a really successful brand. So we are happy, and the market in the US is our most important export market. So I have to say for all people who buy our wines, thank you that you pay our bills and my salary. And yeah, and I told you Fritz was, he had a vision and he had a philosophy. And I can tell you that we invest around 7.5 million euros the last, since 2003, and 2/3 was out of the running business. So we developed that from 65,000 bottles up to 650,000 bottles, only with the Weingut Krems brand. And if you visit us, and this is an, I would everybody invite, if you're in Europe, if you're in Austria, please come to Krems. It is a beautiful area. You saw it maybe in the video. We are really a touristic area for sure. There are river cruises, for example, a lot of American people. So we see that now where we have the pandemic since almost 14 months and nobody is coming to Austria, and it's so quiet and it's so... We are a touristic area in the end of the day, and Krems is a wonderful historic city, and also the Wachau, Dürnstein, for example, this is 5 kilometers far from us. So I will invite everybody, if you're in Europe, please visit us, and then you will see this is a winery which is in the city center of a historic city. So nobody will guess that we are vinifying 650,000 bottles of wine there, because everything, Austria is a small country, so everything is more tight than you know it from the States. And especially where our winery is located. So most people are really curious if they see that. You know, nobody will guess that it's possible there. And yeah, I told you, really important, young, really high motivated team. And also a big effort of our city government and of our owners is that they let us run the winery like it would be our winery. So if somebody says that the wine is not good, I don't think like an employee would think, so okay, it's their wine. In our case, it's our wine, and we live that, and also everybody, every member of the team, and I think it's great that everybody know what is to do, and we don't care about a lot about hours, and yeah, I think everybody works more than the 40 hours that is normal in Austria. And yeah, we are happy that we can sell our wines in the States, and I'm the guy which is responsible for the US market. For in the end of the day, I'm responsible for the sales, for the export. We split that 3 years ago. I got an assistant because we are not getting younger, so I'm turning 50 this year, and I'm good for the US market, for example, but I'm too big and too loud for the Asian market, I think. And so we have a really nice young guy who is hopefully successful in the Asian market, but I'm not 100% sure that I will alive that in my career, in my business career, that Chinese people will enjoy Grüner Veltliner so much. So I think they need the big brands of the world to impress their international guests. But in the end of the day, I think the US market, or the US, is a good example that people also can handle not so important varieties like Grüner Veltliner. So I think all wine interested people in the States know Grüner Veltliner is a good white wine variety and is coming from Austria in the end of the day. Cheers. Sorry for my bad English. So I told you that I'm not so well trained because I'm not traveling. So normally twice a year in the States, some years three times. I'm not sure about, I think maybe the COVID crisis taught us that. So in the past, if friends try to make Skype calls, if Skype was new, I said, come on, send me an email. Today, all these virtual tastings are getting more real life, normal. And I think there, maybe it's good for the pollution and good for the CO2. And
wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Goose.
I need a sip of water. Sorry for.
Yes. That was an amazing presentation. We appreciate your time. We do have a few minutes left, so I would love to ask you a couple of questions.
Yes.
Let's see. You mentioned the 1971 Grüner that won the award in Germany. Please share how the vinification and vineyard management styles from the 1970s differ from those used today.
Today it's a little bit difficult to explain that because I was born in 1971. But I can tell you, I asked my uncle and my grandfather and also Mr. Körbler, who is a really great guy, the former winemaker, which is still living here in the winery. In the end of the day, there was almost no Riesling existing here in the area. So it was much more so these Müller-Thurgauer and Neuburger and these typical old-fashioned varieties. They harvest not too late. So that is a development of the beginning, middle of 80s to the beginning of 90s. That the people start making a reserve category style or a smaragd style. So you have to know that in the 70s, it was not the wine industry. In Austria, nobody understands. In America, everybody's talking about wine industry. In our case, it's family business. So in our case, it's not the family, but we have the same style than a normal family business. So we are all together 30 people for the vineyards, for the cellar, for everything. And in the past, it was a mixed agriculture business in the end of the day. So they had fields, they have some cows, some pigs, and in the end of the day, they produce what they need for their life. And they had also one or two or three vineyards. So in the 70s, there was not wineries in this style, which was only focused on winemaking, that was not existing in these areas. So the people was not so well educated, but in good vintages they made good wine. So maybe if you say what is the biggest difference, it's we don't have too much off vintages. So for me, the last really difficult vintage in Austria was 96. So that was a lot of rain in July and August, a lot of green rot in August. So we had botrytis on green grapes, which is the worst case that you can have. Because if the botrytis starts, if the grapes are green, you don't have to wait. So if you get a noble rot, which is coming in October, second, third week of October, that is okay. You can make a perfect smaragd style of wine or sweet wines or whatever. But if you get green rot, you forget that. And we learned a lot. And what is the influence on the market or on the customers is vintages, difficult vintages like 2014 or 2016 are smaller quantities in the single vineyards because we have to select much more. But they didn't do that in the 70s or 80s. So if I ask my grandfather, he harvests vineyards traditionally in the same week, and he didn't care really what it ripe, well, what botrytis or anything stuff. So he couldn't understand that we did a grain harvest first of all. So sometimes you have to thin out if there are two grapes and two less of foliage, then you have to do a grain harvest. So that was. My grandfather was 80 and he was still out in vineyards, and he said you can't cut them down to the bottom, and it was difficult to explain that to him. And they also didn't do that high selection in the vineyards we do now, but in good vintages. And I think maybe a secret is that they know not too much. Because we are out of this generation which have to know all kind of acidities, not a total acidity, also apple acidity, wine acidities, so things you can't change, you know? So you know that is not the right content, that is too low, that is too high. So sometimes we analyze too much, and I can tell you, if I compare that with 10 years ago, we analyzed much more. So we step two steps back and stop doing all these analyses to have these gas chromatograph in our lab. We solved it. We said, okay, we have to do more with our palates and with our hands and with our eyes, more than with technical measurement tools. And it is also maybe a philosophy of the younger generation. So our cellar master, Peter Rethaler, he's a great guy. He's turning 30 this year, and he was in the most interesting moment at the Jurčić winery at Alvin and Steffi overtook the winery and moved to organic. And so he was 3 years there, and he got a lot of experience, and it was also possible to do a lot of experiments. And he said it was not my money, it was the Jurčić family money that we spent, but he got a lot of experience. And it's important to have these young people. You have to have this influence of these young people. If I wake up in the morning, I think I'm still young, but in the end of the day, if I see that I'm born in 71, I see that I'm turning 50, so I'm not young anymore. But yeah.
Thank you very much. And I'm just going to ask one more question because we only have about 5 minutes left. And I want to piggyback off of what you said, where you're moving away from the analysis and you're depending more on your eyes, your palate, and your sensory, your senses. So at one point you mentioned grapes spending less time on the skins in warmer vintages. So that's okay. So what other techniques are used by winemakers to combat the effects of warmer vintages? And do you anticipate warmer vintages increasing with the effects of climate change? So yeah, as a winemaker, you have your vineyard techniques and management that you can do for the canopy management, but as a winemaker?
It starts in the vineyards. Like in the end of the day, the most important thing is to have perfect grapes. So you can buy the modest modern technique stuff for a cellar that you can buy for money, but if the grapes are not perfect, you get a rerunning in a problem. We invest in people. So we, since 3.5 years, we have a really well-educated guy, Jürgen Peter, who is our vineyard manager. He came also from Jurčić. But we didn't hire him from Jurčić. He quit, and after 1.5 years, he started at our place. And he's the key for our quality improves the last year, because he was 18 years the vineyard manager of Jurčić. He did all the organic change, and so we are sustainable certified. We are on the way to organic, so I can't guarantee that we sign this or next year before the harvest, but we will sign in the next few years, because we saw that we have only one soil and we have only one world, and we hope that the other generations can make wine like we do it. So we start in the vineyards, changing a lot in kind of grain crops and pruning systems, and we don't use any chemical fertilizers since over 30 years, for example. We don't use any herbicides and pesticides. So the only thing that we are far from organic farming is the treatments. And there the biggest problem is that we don't own the wineries. So we have shareholders like the city that they want money from us every year. So, and if you ask, for example, Fred Leumer, or you had Gernot Heinrich in the tasting I saw, some vintages they lost 70%. That would be for us almost impossible. But we work hard on that. So for example, the treatments on weekends, if you're organic, there is no tolerance. So we know we can spray with the treatment stuff, synthetic treatment stuff that we use now, we can spray every 7 or 10 days. It's no problem. Yeah, if you work organic or biodynamic, you have only cup and sulfur at the end of the day. So if it's raining, you have to spray. And if it's Saturday, you have to spray. And if it's Sunday, you have to spray. And we had to reorganize our stuff that we have people on the winery who can do that on weekends. So that sounds so simple, but in the end of the day, you need 3 guys or 4 guys 24/7 here on the winery. And now we have also changed some tractor drivers, and so we are on a good way, and we have a plan, and we are almost sure that we have to move to organic farming. And I think there is also an influence, for sure there is a climate change. So now you can, I'm almost sure you can plant Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc in Kremstal, and you get ripe grapes. If you asked me that 10 years ago, I would say you're stupid if you plant Cabernet Sauvignon. Now we are running, so we have most of our red grapes are Pinot. We see that we got grapes with potential alcohol of 14 the last 2 years. So we discuss we have to have bigger yields or different pruning, or in the end of the day, we use the Pinot a lot for making rosé, because of we are famous for our Pinot rosé. And it's difficult to buy Pinot grapes, so you have to plant own vineyards. Zweigel is no problem. You can buy tons of Zweigel. It's easy. Also organic farm, everything. But Pinot is difficult. And I'm sure that there is also a difference in vinification, in pressing technology. So if you have the chance to chill down the grape material, so we can chill our presses, for example. So we invest in technique to... The problem is if the fermentation starts in the boxes or in the press, because of, I know these situations. So after my studying, I was 7 years traveling around the world, and I was in Sicily, for example. I was 1997 in Sicily, Minfi, a small winery, Planeta. The total production of Planeta at this time was 350,000 bottles. Today they are making 3.8 million bottles or so. And we teach them. There was a German guy from Geisenheim and me, and we said we have to start harvest at 3 o'clock in the morning, because during the day it was 35 degrees. And they said, are you stupid? This is crazy to start at 3 o'clock in the morning. I said, is it not more comfortable to pick at 25 degrees than you have 35 degrees? And we saw really the problem that the juice in the boxes on the bottom stopped fermentation in the vineyards. So you can't settle them down, you can't. So I learned in the middle of the 90s what we have to do to get colder grapes, colder must, colder juice. And we work with CO2 pellets and tried all that stuff. But in the end of the day, you can't chill that enough. So if it doesn't came in with the right temperature to the winery, press it and chill the juice. That is possible. So maybe if the juice is too warm and it's dangerous that it starts fermentation, I will not do a skin contact, because it's, for me, then you have an uncontrolled process. I think that is good if you like to make natural wines, but if you like to make wines in our style, you need a controlled process. Not controlled like we did it 10, 15 years ago, because it was 10, 15 years ago, it was chilled down to 8 degrees during the sedimentation time, and then fermented with cultured yeasts, maybe aroma yeasts, and we stopped that all. Because the problem is, if you have too much yeast influence, if you can't say, is it from Wachau, from Kremstal, from Kamptal, or from Wagram, it's okay, because everything is in a circle of 30 kilometers. We have almost the same climate influences. But if you can't say, is it Grüner Veltliner, or is it Welsh Riesling from Styria, which is 400 kilometers south from us, because both are so yeast influenced that in some tastings with colleagues, I said, I don't know what is the variety, but I can tell you it is 1118 from Önofirm. So I was able to detect the yeast, but not the variety. So we stopped this process. So we said more influence, more character. We should allow wine to taste and to smell like wine again.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Yeah. Lovely. Well, that was truly an
incredible. I think we need 6 minutes more, because I saw Loima was 1 hour 10.
That's right. He was 1 hour 10. And I know you're joking. I do have a final question, if you're willing to stick with us for a few more minutes. And that is about, since you're in charge of export markets and United States is your area that you're focusing on, I have a question regarding export markets and domestic consumption. So how has the consumption changed within Austria of Austrian wines? And how have the export markets changed since 2005, specifically referencing the Great Recession? And what are your projections for the changes in the market post-COVID?
I can tell you about the domestic market. We are fighting hard to keep over 30 liters. I think now we are on 32 liters. So we are really stable. So we, the last 15 years, we are between 30 and 34, so 34, 35. So And we are really patriots in Austria. So I think the content of Austrian wine, which is drunk in Austria, is in the restaurant business 78%, and in the supermarket business 65% or so. Our development, wouldn't be possible with domestic market. So from 65,000 bottles in 15 years to 650,000 bottles, you need export business. And in the beginning, Fritz was really focused on European markets like Germany and Scandinavia and Benelux and also the States. So in the end of the day, he took everybody who believed in his quality of wines. He said, in the beginning, there was no strategy. We had to sell. We had to sell to a life, you know? So if you guarantee somebody that they don't have to spend money anymore into a city-owned winery, you have to sell every single bottle. It's also a shame. Now we make really beautiful, we spoke with Weinbau about importing that too, really beautiful single vineyard wooden boxes with maps inside. And they are really, really fine and nice. And the plan was to have one older vintage and one current vintage of the single vineyards. And now we see that we have almost nothing in all the vintages, because Fritz told me, Gusi, I'm sorry, we don't put anything back to the cellar. We sold everything. We try to sell everything. Since 5, 6, 7 years, we put 600, minimum 600 bottles unlabeled in the last place of our storage room where nobody hopefully find it before the wine is 10 years old. Yeah. Also really important markets, the States, Russia. So I never believed in that, but I'm traveling the last years. I traveled minimum twice a year also to Russia, because we thought in Russia you sell only in, they have really big supermarkets like Walmart or so. There it's called OK. And there they sell a lot of cheap wines from Georgia, but in the end of the day, we sell more than half of our amount that we sell to Russia is in a single vineyard category. So I have two markets which are really important for single vineyards, Holland and Russia. They sell more than half of our whole single vineyard, so expensive wine production. After the COVID crisis, I can tell you that we are in a lucky situation. So in the first year of COVID, we grow 12% or so, because we have trademarks which are in the Austrian supermarket business. So they are different. It's not the same label. And some export markets with big COVID crises like Belgium or Denmark, the people are sitting at home and drinking, I guess. It's the only idea that I have for that, because in Belgium we are 20% plus. And depends on which kind of business your importer is focused. So, and Belgium, Denmark, and Holland, we have importers which are focused because of the special law situations and so. They are special on private clients and private customers. I'm almost sure we have the plan. We sold absolutely on our numbers, on our goal in the States last year, and they think that it increase this year. So they told us be prepared and be prepared for 10-15% plus.
That's terrific. That's good news. Well, thank you again for this incredible
presentation. But with our small amount of wine, if we get one or two states more, we have these 10 or 15%. That is the secret. So.
There you go. I think somebody listening has his job worked out in front of him, John.
That's it.
But if somebody will help to reach these goals, please drink.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, things are picking up. And that's a good sign right now. So
that's right. Well,
you don't have a glass. Man.
I did. It's empty now. Yeah.
I have almost four bottles to finish now.
You're welcome, Goose. You're welcome.
I hope it was okay for you. My bad English and PowerPoint presentation also.
It was all wonderful. Do you have any final thoughts to share before we say goodnight?
Yeah, I hope that everybody came well through the crisis, and I hope that all businesses are recovering fast. And I think the biggest problems for us are shipping and transport business in Italy, in the States, and to get in containers. So please help them that they can pay employees and coming fast back stronger than before the crisis. I can't imagine how the restaurant business will change in the States, but I hope that all healthy companies are coming back strong and fast.
Absolutely. We are definitely experiencing about 30% shortages on wines. So as a retailer, it's become a lot more difficult for us to source wines.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine the difficulties that you're experiencing on your end as well. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Goose and John, and thank you to all those viewing. We really appreciate your interest in the great wines of Austria.
How many people was you?
I'll send you the number after the class. And we encourage you to visit our website calendar at corkandpork.co to view the upcoming Austrian wine events with some of the region's greatest producers, such as our guest this evening, Goose. Thank you so much, all. I'm going to end the meeting for everyone. And thanks again. We'll see you soon. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.